John Bachman, who pierces people's face. The K is for the kill, L is for the lover, and the M is for the mutiny, and I wish it didn't happen.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my drum?
Now the N is for knots, oh no, my bones are sinking. The B is for the peg leg that keeps me standing up. A Q is for quantum leap, R is for the rum, and the S is for the scurvy, which I wish I didn't get.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg.
That's underneath my boat. And B is for Mukitas, who plays a sour note. W is Tiasis, X marks a spot. Why? Cause I'm a pirate.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my grog?
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 90.5 FM from Washington, D.C. If you can hear this signal and you like what you hear, send an email to WSQTRadio@hushmail.com. Repeat, WSQTRadio@hushmail.com.
Welcome to Palestine Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Centre, www.imemc.org, for Monday, October 31st, 2011. A ceasefire is called between armed groups in Gaza and the Israeli military, and Netanyahu calls on the Palestinians to arrange secret direct talks. These stories and more coming up, so stay tuned. Tensions between Gaza resistance groups and the Israeli military has been mounting over this weekend, with an Israeli airstrike on a military training centre belonging to the Al-Quds Brigades, the armed wing of Islamic Jihad. Five fighters were reportedly killed. Groups in Gaza are said to have fired missiles into the western Negev, scoring a direct hit and killing an Israeli civilian. Military sources state that six mortar shells were fired into Israel. The Israeli army claims they proceeded to fire into Gaza on a group of fighters. Palestinian medical sources reported that the Israeli Air Force bombarded the area in the southern part of the Gaza Strip on Sunday, killing two Palestinian fighters. Most of the casualties are from Islamic Jihad, with one being a member of the National Resistance Brigades, the armed wing of the Democratic Front for the Liberation of Palestine, who was killed on Sunday morning. A second member of the NRB was killed during a separate strike on Sunday. It is reported that the number of Palestinians killed over the weekend has now reached 10 and one reported Israeli death. In an attempt to prevent further escalations, Israel and resistance groups agreed upon a ceasefire on Sunday. The NRB issued a statement saying that Israel is held responsible for the military escalations in the Gaza Strip. Moreover, the statement called on the DFLP fighters to respond to the Israeli airstrike, which led to the death of one of its fighters. Whilst Israeli fighter jets still patrolled the skies on Monday, Abu Ahmad, spokesperson for the Al-Quds Brigades, told the Seventh-day Egyptian paper that his group values the Egyptian efforts. He stated that the brigades will retaliate to any violation and that it will be determined in the time and place of this retaliation, adding that all armed groups will abide by the declared truce as long as Israel fulfils its part. During the quartet visit to Palestine last week, Israel submitted a proposal to break the current impasse of the peace process. This is by initiating secret direct negotiations which were immediately rejected by Palestinian officials. The quartet has held separate meetings with Tel Aviv and Ramallah in hopes of breaking the stalemate. The proposal of Israel for secret direct negotiations has been rejected by the Palestinians, who refuse to enter direct negotiations while settlement construction continues. As a result of the Palestinian refusal to enter the negotiations, Netanyahu expressed his outrage and attacked the Palestinian president Abu Mazen, stating that he rejects peace and has no serious intentions to enter into negotiations with Israel to end the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. That's all for today from the IMEMC News. This was the Monday, October 31st, daily roundup of news from the occupied Palestinian territories. We hope that you will join us again tomorrow. This has been brought to you by Hussam Qassis and me, William Gibson.
Afghanistan, Saturday. 13 U.S. soldiers were killed by a suicide car bomb attack on a NATO convoy. The Taliban claimed to have killed 16 foreign soldiers. The Toyota Land Cruiser was estimated to be carrying 1,500 pounds of explosives. Quote, we can confirm that 13 International Security Assistance Force members have died, said a spokesman for the NATO-led International Security Assistance Force. A U.S. official confirmed that all 13 NATO service members were American troops. This has led to calls for prohibiting the public from using roads used by NATO convoys, a measure sure to build more support for the insurgents. Afghanistan, today, a suicide vehicle bomb hit a checkpoint in a neighborhood housing United Nations and International Aid Group's offices in the southern city of Kandahar, killing four people and severely damaging a UN agency's building, according to Afghan officials. Gunmen then stormed the neighborhood and seized control of at least one building, sparking a battle with Afghan and NATO forces, according to Kandahar Police Chief General Abdul Razak. Firefight lasted more than 2 hours before the two insurgents were shot dead, according to a statement from the provincial governor's office. At least three of the dead were employees of the United Nations Refugee Agency, the U.S.-based International Relief and Development. Pakistan, today, another U.S. drone strike killed four people. Pakistani officials called them suspected militants. The missiles hit a vehicle close to the town of Mir Ali in a North Waziristan tribal region, which is effectively under the control of Al-Qaeda and Taliban fighters, many of whom fight U.S. forces in Afghanistan. The identity of those killed wasn't known, according to officials. Iraq, yesterday, three U.S. helicopters participated in the arrest of an Iraqi along with its family, according to Karbala's Security Commission member. U.S. forces released the family and transported the man by helicopter to an unknown destination, Yasham al-Fatawi told Aswat al-Iraq. He added that three helicopters participated in the operation and began searching the people instead of the Iraqi checkpoint. Why are U.S. helicopters flying these sorts of missions when all U.S. troops are supposed to be out of Iraq within 61 days? Mr. Barack Obama, now's the time to throw in a towel. Bring all the troops home from Iraq and Afghanistan today.
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 90.5 FM from Washington, D.C. If you can hear this signal and you like what you hear, send an email to WSQTRadio@hushmail.com. Repeat, WSQTRadio@hushmail.com.
Since the Great Recession began in 2008, the average American has lost $1,300 in earning power. Sagging incomes have also fueled anger at the political and economic elite, as seen in the emerging Occupy Wall Street movement. Persistent 9% unemployment with few job prospects has become a fact of life. According to the Christian Science Monitor, inflation-adjusted incomes fell 9.8% since 2008, while the value of housing has fallen 22%, since the peak in 2007. The stock market, as measured by the Standard & Poor's 500 Index, is still 5% below the market peak in 1999. Lower-skilled and less educated Americans have been hurt the most by the Great Recession and stagnant recovery. These workers are more likely to be affected by outsourcing of factory jobs to emerging economies like China and India. Economist Joel Naroff commented, "It appears large parts of the workforce have moved permanently into lower-paying positions. The economy can't grow at 4% when the middle class is becoming the lower middle class."
The 28th of October, Occupy DC backed up student protesters who marched on Sallie Mae, demanding the forgiveness or repudiation of crippling student debt. While students had planned to enter the building and discuss this with the bosses at Sallie Mae, cops knew they were coming and it bogged down into a siege of the building, all the doors, all the way around, nothing allowed in or out. There was considerable aggression on the part of some of the police and a display of heavy riot weapons. Heavy weapons brought out.
Dear police!
There are children here!
Department of Homeland Security.
Remember Oakland! Remember Oakland!
Shelter for the city of Oakland. I hereby declare this to be an unlawful assembly.
The 26th of October, in Oakland, California, riot police opened fire on Occupy Oakland to drive protesters in the park, shooting at point-blank range with tear gas grenades and flashbang grenades. Iraq War veteran Scott Olson took a direct hit from one of these projectiles to the head. As this is being recorded, he still cannot speak because of brain damage. He almost died. The brutality in Oakland did not deter protesters there from immediately seeking to retake the exact same place. And the threat of the same in D.C. did not deter student protesters outside Sallie Mae. Since Sallie Mae officials locked up the building, refusing to meet with protesters, protesters refused to allow them to leave the building or to accept any deliveries.
You can't get out. It's a siege. You can't get out. We can't get in. You can't get out. We can't get in, you can't get out.
Back door is covered, the garage. You gotta sit in.
We can't get out, we can't get in, you can't get out. We can't get in, you can't get out.
Eventually there was a nasty pushing incident at one of the back doors where the cops had to fight like hell to get about six people out. At one point, a trumpet belonging to a member of the brass band was smashed by the police. It may have been in that incident, or it may have been during an earlier pushing match during the inbound march. I'm not sure which. Here's what the showdown at the back door sounded like. That was the only time cops were able to force their way through with anyone trying to get out of the building. The siege was lifted at about 5 p.m. as protesters marched back to their base at McPherson Square. Near the beginning of the siege of Sallie Mae, one of the students had this to say about Sallie Mae's attitude about forgiving outrageous, crippling student debt, in some cases as much as $100,000. Debt so high, people would be better off buying a house and working at McDonald's in some cases. You heard that, Sallie Mae, and you heard that, college administrators. The Occupy movements are not going to be dispersed by the escalating police violence. No amount of force can stop a movement backed by 37% of the American public, and people are demanding that something be done about this outrageous debt. Forgive the student debt, Well, just as the protesters who besieged your headquarters promised on the 28th of October, they will return. If bailouts are good enough for bankers, they're good enough for students. This is the March for Jobs and Justice in solidarity with the Occupy movement coming out of Howard University.
99%. We are the 99%.
That was the 28th of October. The march started at Howard University and passed through both the Occupy DC encampment at McPherson Square and the Stop the Machine encampment on Freedom Plaza before marching across the U.S. Chamber of Commerce across from the White House.
We want
justice.
We want
justice.
We want
justice.
We want you to know that the American people, the 99% of the people who own less than 2% of the vote, demand that you act for us.
Yes.
Now, you spread the love. Spread the $400 billion worth of property that you're sitting on and give it to the American people. We want good jobs. We want fair jobs. We want jobs for all.
Jobs for black people.
Jobs for black people.
Jobs for white people.
Jobs for white people.
Jobs for brown people.
Jobs for brown people.
Jobs for red people.
Jobs for red people.
Jobs for yellow people.
Jobs for yellow people.
Jobs for men.
Jobs for men.
Jobs for women.
Jobs for women.
Jobs for young people.
Jobs for young people.
Jobs for older people.
Jobs for older people.
We want jobs and justice.
Jobs and justice.
We want it.
From Freedom Plaza, this is the fourth time we've come to the Chamber of Commerce.
That's right.
Because fifth time. We come so often. They are our favorite because they are the corporate bully of Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
They are the corporate bully. When you're trying to end corporate power, who do you go after? You go after the head of the bullies.
That's right.
You face the head of the bullies.
That's right.
The guy in here we want to see removed, Tom Donahue.
Ooh.
Tom Donahue. Tom Donahue!
Shame on you, Tom Donahue! Shame on you, Tom Donahue! Shame on you, Tom Donahue!
Shame on you, Tom Donahue!
What did he do?
Tell us what Tom Donahue has corrupted elections across the country. Here's what they do to the Chamber of Commerce. They go into state Supreme Court races in states across the country. In the last few weeks of a race, they target the most progressive, civil rights-oriented, consumer-oriented justice in that court with a $1 million campaign against them, no time to fundraise, no time to respond, and they put in place a corporate justice. They have transitioned over 20 states to corporate courts because of that kind of strategy of corruption. And they do it by hiding their money. They create these fake groups like Citizens for a Strong Ohio. It took 5 years of litigation to find out who those citizens were. Those citizens were banks, pharmaceuticals, for-profit hospitals, all the big business interests of those citizens, and they changed that court. They changed that court. It took a judge threatening a $25,000 a day fine for us to find out that truth. And they've done that across the country. And now they're polluting our elections with money from out of the country.
Yeah.
Because they're a transnational corporation. They charge membership fees to oil companies that are run by Gulf cartels. They take the money into their general fund and use that money to fund campaigns. That's what this company they do. And that's against the law.
Yeah.
These guys are lawbreakers. They should be put in criminal. And Tom Donahue should be removed.
Heard about the evils that Tom Donahue represents. Now, trained as a lawyer, I want to defend Tom Donahue. I want to say something in his favor. What has he done good? He has united us.
Yeah.
Well, I just wanted to say this about the Chamber of Commerce. This Chamber of Commerce is no different from any other Chamber of Commerce. Let's not be fooled. I was working in Gadsden County, Florida, which is a 70% black county in Florida. Chamber of Commerce, if you get the book from that, the Chamber of Commerce, you would think that there were no black people in Gadsden County.
Mm-hmm.
So let's not be fooled about the problem. This is only part of the problem. Only part of the problem. Free D.C. Obama's not going to free a damn thing.
That's right.
We need to be clear on that. We need to be clear on that. As Kentucky runs for re-election. I don't care if Michelle Bachmann gets in there. I don't care about the plantation burning. Let it burn.
Yeah.
Let it burn.
Yeah.
And you have to take that same position. This is not about saving democracy. When was America ever a democracy? When? You tell me when. You tell me when it wasn't a corporation.
On the 29th of October, Occupy DC marched on Bank of America, the U.S. Treasury, and the White House, demanding that the Robin Hood tax, 0.5% on all investment transactions at its changes, be applied.
We
don't roll it
hard. 99 cents. We
right here, bought from the U.S. Treasury by the White House.
99 cents. We
ATM idea will be closed. It's a pity that real arrows couldn't be used, but it was just too close to the White House.
Draw your bows!
Here's the
okay! Bring out their arrows!
To the rich!
debt.
Right.
And instead.
And it will trickle down.
And it will trickle down.
This rain.
Like this rain.
From the sky.
From the sky.
And benefit all.
And benefit all.
We know.
While right here in Washington, D.C.
We also know that people are unable to put food on the table. There are people without homes in this cold. People without the proper education for their children.
There are people without proper education for their children.
And we also know that people are standing for a better world. So we are saying, tax the rich.
That is where
resources can come from.
For housing.
For students and their education.
For decent jobs.
And a better economy.
That will protect this planet for the future.
So 0.5%, many of us call it the Robin Hood tax.
Tax casino capitalism.
Get the resources that are needed. For a clean economy.
Green jobs.
For education.
For healthcare.
For housing.
Together, we can build.
A better world.
We know.
Even the Congressional Budget Office knows.
In the last 30 years.
The rich have gotten richer.
275%. 275%.
The treasury to the White House, a mixture of rain and snow.
So we're standing.
Outside the house.
We're lots of power lines.
Which also seems.
To be right down the block.
From the big banks.
And so I wonder.
If the president.
Is on the side of the people, or the wealthy, or the bankers, or Wall Street.
Right now, the president is about to get on a plane. He's about to get on a plane to go to a lovely, lovely place in France, where he's going to hang with a whole bunch of the other world leaders of the 20 biggest economies. And we know that if he wanted to, he could go and work with them to enact a Robin Hood tax. Robin Hood was right.
Tax the rich tonight.
There have been at least two major police attacks on the Occupy movements in the last week, all of them unsuccessful at dispersing protesters or breaking the movement. This movement now has the support of an estimated 37% of the public, according to the Washington Post. The worst of the police attacks was an assault on Occupy Oakland by riot cops from 17 different agencies firing gas grenades and flashbang grenades. An attack that left Iraq War veteran and Occupy Oakland protester Scott Olson critically wounded from a direct hit to the head from
one of the projectors. As this is being recorded, he is unable to speak because of brain damage. Occupy Oakland protesters, undeterred, responded by retaking Oscar Grant Park directly in front of Oakland City Hall the very next day, with 3,000 people marching back in triumph over the police. The unions have scheduled a general strike for Wednesday, the 2nd of November in Oakland. The strike will shut down and blockade the port and close all construction sites, banks, and corporations. A second major police attack took place in Denver, where the riot squad opened fire with rubber bullets and pepper spray. A lot of injuries were inflicted, but again, Occupy Denver is still standing.
Fuck you!
Finally, the New York Fire Department, backed by police, stole all generators and generator fuel from Occupy Wall Street's base in Zuccotti Square, also known now as Liberty Square. They are attempting to deny all sources of warmth as winter weather sets in, hoping that protesters will either throw in the towel or freeze to death in the face of snow. Again, they have failed, as protesters now cart car batteries back and forth between the campsite and off-site generators to power heaters and media equipment. Occupy Wall Street, Occupy Denver, and Occupy Oakland are standing strong. The national and global Occupy movement is going to take down the banksters and throw the 1% on the trash heap of history.
Coming Georgia Avenue, uptown, ain't that something? Something. Small businesses, shop owners, hearts pumping, cause they know their livelihoods is about to take a thumping. Thumping. See, you can't compete with a superstore who's an importer of slave laborers. Craftsmanship, low price to flip, to undercut the market, hand over fist.
Walmart
is infamous for the way they behave. Low wage pay, treat the workers like slaves. Employees who try to unionize, soon find themselves in unemployment lines. The way they treat women needs improving. 1.6 million sisters are suing them for being paid less than the male equivalent. On these issues and more, we can't afford to be ignorant.
Keep DC Walmart free. It won't benefit you or me. They ain't about spreading love in the community. They ain't about Chocolate City unity. Opportunists out to make a buck quick. Suck up all your resources and then they split. They try to come across as if they legit, but really their motives are counterfeit.
This is the Funkinest Journalist with your three Walmart commandments. Step one, move in and crush competition by underselling. Step two, pay workers nothing and block unionization. Step three, take all that money, put it into the Walton Family Foundation, and turn that into political influence to protect yourself and make even more.
Walmart.
It's not a good fit for Chocolate City. Let me holler black at you with the skinny. Important that you clearly understand and remember DC doesn't work with the right-wing agenda. The Walton families are big contributors to bigoted representatives and senators. Trent Lott, sinister. Strom Thurmond, similar. Confederate, state-loving George Bush ministers. Overseer plantation mentality. Results in black and brown casualties. Statehood opposition for the district has been supported by Walmart's mischief. The D.C. Voting Rights Act was defeated, assisted via Walmart PACs. And now they wanna come here to see their money stack. Stay up on the facts. Chocolate City, don't relax and fight back.
Keep D.C. Walmart free. It won't benefit you or me. They ain't about spreading love in the community. They ain't about Chocolate City unity. Opportunist out to make a buck quick. Suck up all your resources and then they split. They try to come across as if they legit, but really their motives are counterfeit.
Keep DC Walmart free is an emerging activist group of DC residents stepping up to challenge the corporate big box invasion of Chocolate City. Walmart has plans to establish 4 stores in DC by 2012. Walmarts in DC will threaten small businesses, cause loss of more jobs than it will bring to the community, and lower the wage standards for all workers. To find out more and get involved, visit walmartfreedc.org.
On the 20th of September, I received a robotic survey call from the Consumer Energy Alliance. They started with 2 questions, quote, do you believe gas prices are too high, and quote, do you believe unemployment is too high? Recognizing that this had to be a fake industry push-pull, I answered no to both questions, even though Wall Street has indeed thrown far too many people out of work. I then managed to start recording the rest of this phony so-called survey, microphone to telephone. Turns out the whole survey is about pressuring the Department of State to approve that nasty tar sands oil pipeline that 1,250 people were arrested in front of the White House saying no to. Here's what my microphone got.
Due to U.S. dependence on imports from the Middle East, to build this importing pipeline, TransCanada must receive a permit from the Department of State that will allow it to cross the border from Canada to the U.S. The Department of State is currently soliciting public comments on whether to grant the permit and allow TransCanada to build the pipeline and put thousands of Americans to work. May we have your permission to relay your support for this vital pipeline?
No, you may not. I oppose the pipeline and I wish the project would be blocked.
Please say yes, no,
no.
Repeat, now.
No.
Would you like more information on
no.
oil and gas production and the jobs that it can create?
No.
Are you male?
Yes.
Are you 50 years of age or older?
No.
Thank you for your time and views. This survey was conducted by the Consumer Energy Alliance. Goodbye. 7-1.
I should have gotten the recording more quickly.
It looks to me like the Consumer Energy Alliance is desperate to keep alive our bad romance with fossil fuels and dirty oil. No, I wasn't going to let them falsely tell the Department of State that I support the filthy Alberta tar sands mining. I'd rather see gasoline cost 10 bucks a gallon than support a pipeline whose contributions to global warming is going to flood every coastal city, including mine.
In the never-ending quest for harder-to-access fossil fuels, oil spills, gas explosions, and pipeline leaks are everyday occurrences. The impacts of the quest for oil on ecosystems, while not always fully understood, are easy to see. But the effect on human health is often harder to determine, and serious problems are often misdiagnosed or just dismissed out of hand. Ricky Ott is a marine toxicologist, activist, author, and former commercial fisher who experienced the Exxon Valdez oil spill in Alaska firsthand. She spent years examining the continuing threats to sea life and humans from that 1989 disaster. After British Petroleum's massive Gulf of Mexico oil spill in 2010, she spent months helping local residents identify health consequences and demand help in getting medical treatment. Ott also spent time in Battle Creek, Michigan, after a tar sands pipeline ruptured in July 2010 and spilled 1 million gallons of tar sands oil into the Kalamazoo River watershed. Between the Lines, Melinda Tuhus spoke with Ott during the Connecting for Change Conference and East Coast Pioneers Gathering held in New Bedford, Massachusetts in October, where she was a keynote speaker. Here, Ott discusses the human impacts of fossil fuel use and outlines her hope for a fossil fuel-free future.
I think the best arguments for stopping all of our fossil fuel use is the human health impacts. This has been consistently covered up every time there's a spill or a disaster, like in the Gulf. Oh, people have heat stroke, people are seasick, people have food poisoning. I've been down there again recently, just in October, and people still have the same symptoms that they had a year and a half ago. I'm sorry, but you don't get seasickness for a year and a half, or heat stroke for a year and a half. People are on multiple rounds of antibiotics, or have been, with absolutely no change in their symptoms. This is because it's not a biological causation. It's chemical causation. And what I've been seeing is the petrochemical industry and, unfortunately, the insurance company, which is influenced heavily by these big corporations, they don't want to acknowledge that oil makes people sick, very, very sick. And so they've covered it up. And medical doctors in the Gulf now are intentionally or very misinformedly, let me put it that way, diagnosing people with heat stroke and whatnot, because they know that if they put chemical illness, they will not get paid. The insurance company will not pay them. So there's all kinds of levels of this going on. We see this with the tar sands. I was shocked when I went to Battle Creek, Michigan in August. So it was about a year after the Enbridge pipeline spill. I was shocked that people were exactly as sick as they were in the Gulf with all the same symptoms. And I realized that I had hardly heard anything about this in the news. And then I realized, oh, that's because it's a political game. Our nation at the highest level has no exit strategy off of oil or fossil fuels. Forget natural gas as a bridge. The fracking is killing people. It's poisoning water, irreversibly damaging precious water to the point where it will be toxic for generations. We cannot afford these environmental costs. We cannot afford the human health costs of pursuing this addiction to fossil fuels until the last drop is gone. We have to get off of it. And what that's going to take, since our federal government has no imagination space to do this, completely been hijacked by the corporations, is it's going to take the people doing exactly what they're doing now, rising up and saying enough and becoming aware of the huge costs to human health and the environment and saying no. No bridge with natural gas. No such thing as clean coal. Nuclear is a disaster waiting to happen. We need to seriously invest in clean, green, safe energies. I don't even call them alternative. I call them energy options. This is all doable. We can do it now, and we need to do it.
Now, if we did it now, that would, they say, you know, we can do it. There's just, we lack the political will. But it would also mean, I think, people would have to use less energy, which wouldn't necessarily be a terrible burden based on how much we use now. But is that true? Don't you think that's true?
I think part of the equation is we've been wasting an incredible amount of energy. And if we just simply cut back on what, I don't even think people are aware of how much we really are wasting. So there's a combination of we're using more than we need right now. And then there is the real fact that we as Americans have been living sort of high on the hog. And it's going to take restructuring our lifestyles. I think that can be done in a way that actually makes our living better, where we'll have more free time, more quality time with our families. So that's sort of the pioneer's dream. But I'm seeing this dream in transition towns and other communities across the U.S., sustainable Seattle, dreaming New Mexico. I mean, there are states and communities working towards this end of how could we be happier with less stuff. And you know what? It's real. I mean, the communities that are trying this are finding it's much more satisfying than the way we live now. So I'm actually looking at being really excited about what's around the corner in terms of realizing more of our full potential as human beings with less energy.
You said in your talk that 95 to 100% of the hundreds of people from the Gulf whose blood was tested had traces of oil in their system and also evidence of the dispersants. That's shocking.
Okay. What happened when I was in the Gulf, literally by late June, July of 2010, people started asking me as I went back and forth across the Gulf, is there any way that I can prove that I'm feeling this way because of what happened in the Gulf, because of BP's disaster? And I said, yes, we need to take volatile organic solvent blood profiles. And people did that. And they did it across the Gulf from Florida to Louisiana. And what was consistently found, whether they're two-year-olds, 80-year-olds, whether they just are a visitor down to the Gulf or whether they actually had a beach home on the Gulf, that the level of oil that is showing up in people's blood is in the upper 95th to 100th percentile of people nationwide. In other words, they have more oil in their blood than 95 to 100% of the rest of us in the nation. This is toxic. This is an emergency situation, and it is totally freaking people out down there. People are dying. People know people are dying. And people are struggling to get immediate triage for something that the federal government, most of the medical doctors in the Gulf, and BP are completely still denying at this point. I mean, it's an incredible situation. The people are not backing down, though.
That was marine toxicologist Ricky Ott. Her latest book on oil spill impacts is titled Not One Drop. Find more information on the campaign for a fossil fuel-free future on our website at btlonline.org.
With a surge of customs enforcement officers deployed to the U.S.-Mexican border, opportunity abounded for corruption and dirty deals by U.S. border agents. According to the Los Angeles Times, 132 customs agents have been indicted or convicted for corruption since 2004. The number of internal agency investigations has tripled over the last 5 years. Currently, there are over 24,000 customs agents working along the border with Mexico, with half of those agents hired since 2006. The U.S. Department of Homeland Security, which oversees immigration and customs agents, was warned about the possibility of widespread corruption in rushing to hire new agents with limited background checks. Customs agent Luis Allared was hired in 2007 despite having family ties to smugglers and $30,000 in credit card debt. Shortly after starting as an agent, he informed smugglers in Tijuana about which entry point he was patrolling. In 4 months, Allared pocketed over $200,000 paid by smugglers. Allared is now serving a 7-year term for corruption in a federal prison. Veteran customs agents say the rise in corruption is in part the result of political pressure on Washington to hire thousands of agents without adequate funding in place for thorough background checks, pressure exerted by border states where anti-immigrant sentiment is high.